Do you have a delay for me too?
The moment you hear me finish this sentence, say hey.
Hey.
Okay, no, you don't have a delay.
Okay. Cool.
It's just fucking Squirrel with his stupid sexy squirrel icon.
Ah, it's amazing. I love it. You can thank Ben for that.
I hate it. That was confusing to me as a kid when I watched Sword in the Stone. The like amorous lady squirrel. It's difficult.
Okay.
Amorous lady squirrel. Well, yeah, I was like fucking 7 and didn't really get girls. Story of my life. Anyway. Hello and welcome to Keyframes, a podcast about anime. I'm your host, Ben Halliburton, and with me today are Andy.
Hey, hey, hey.
And John.
Hey, 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 hey.
I'm glad we used the joke from our first failed start. This is already auspicious. Anyway, today we're trying something different, which is good because our rate of episode production has not been stellar. So instead of having our discussions about what anime we're going to watch behind closed doors, we're going to have them in front of you, the listener, on this very podcast. So each of us, after the break, is going to be pitching an anime, movie, OVA that we should watch and why we should watch it, and maybe just a little bit about it or about what it means to us. But before the break, we are going to be talking about the anime that we watch obsessively, like some sort of disgusting addict. And speaking of addicts, we have John with probably a list of several hundred anime that he's watched since we last had a podcast.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm throwing a lot of shade. It's because of the tea I drank.
I see how it is. I have watched a lot of anime recently. Actually, I haven't. I watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I watched iZombie, and I'm watching Supernatural, none of which are anime. But that's
none of those are anime.
So I did see an anime this morning, though. I watched a movie in the theaters called Kizu Monogatari, and it is sequel to the long-running Monogatari series that has like thousands of series and millions of episodes.
Yeah, we talked about Owari Monogatari, the most recent mainstream series.
Which, by the way, I still haven't watched, so...
To launch right into that, did you find it confusing then to skip around in the chronology of the Monogatari series?
No, this is a prequel. This is the first book. They're just finally doing the first book. So this is when Araragi finally, like, this is the story of how he became what he is. So, you know, he starts out as like a normal human. And then at the end of this movie, he's a vampire. So...
But the movie itself is only the first of three, right?
Yeah, there are three parts to it, and I think the next one is supposed to be done in Japan around the time of later this year. We'll probably get it in the States and theaters around, I don't know, winter time. Maybe fall, if we're lucky.
If we're really lucky.
Yeah.
So, is it watch?
What do you think of it?
Well, first I want to talk about the experience of going into the theater. It's pretty crowded, actually. The theater here at the Angelica, it's a theater in Dallas. They do a lot of like non-mainstream stuff. So they have a lot of anime, surprisingly to me. Like, I didn't realize they did. I mean, they had a Ghibli month a few months ago, but it was really packed. Like, I guess they sold out of tickets pretty fast. My friend pre-ordered them and then we went. When we got in, like, we sat in a seat, and then we kind of waited a bit, because it wasn't time for the movie to air yet, and a guy comes in, and he's, like, talking to everybody, and he's like, hey, y'all, I know that y'all had to, like, work out some courage to get out of your antisocial shells and come out here, but I'm going to need you to scoot a little closer so that people can get in on the sides, and it's really funny. I lost my
shit. Wait. Were there no, like, seated, or was it, like, a big park bench?
No, I mean, it was a theater, so, like, a movie theater, so it was just seats all, you know, just rows and rows of seats. But he wanted us to scoot in towards the middle, but he said it in the most, like, insulting way possible. He did not use the exact words that I said, for the record. He said, like, I know that a lot of you had to work up some courage to come out here, but I need you to scoot in to the empty seats. So, you know, I was exaggerated, but it was pretty funny. Okay, so...
Anyway, so yeah, so there was that, and then you watched the movie.
And then I watched the movie, and then I left, and that's my story.
You just walked out. You just walked out.
Can I ask, if you haven't mm-hmm. seen the series before, like I have, is it perfectly watchable, or do you need to have some background knowledge of who they are?
That's really hard for me to say, because there's a lot of content that I've watched previous to this. Like I said, this is telling the story of the first book, but I don't know if they leave stuff out because they assume we already have information. It seems like it's pretty watchable, but I don't know if it would be that interesting if you don't have the previous context. Like, there are characters, and it introduces them as if they're new, because in this specific story, they are new characters, but it doesn't really, like, explain what importance they have, if that makes sense. So, I'd say probably don't watch the movie before anything else. Even though it's telling the story of the first book, they made the series in this order, and they've done a pretty good job of jumping around, but also maintaining some sort of consistency in why they're doing that. I don't know. Anyway, so this is a much higher budget experience than I'm used to from the Monogatari series. Like, it's not an ugly show by any means, but it's generally pretty... you know, like, lots of stills or lots of just people sitting around talking. This one.
The Monogatari series is very famous for, like, printed title cards and for panning shots over someone talking in some exotic pose.
Which is very much
the Shaft style, but this, I hear, isn't, right?
Yeah.
I mean, no, if they didn't do, like, a new opening sequence every four episodes or something, they might have a bit more money. But
that's true. They do have a lot of OPs.
But the opening sequences are all great. I mean, you would not have Platinum Disco if it wasn't for the Monogatari series.
True. I just remember
You wouldn't have Platinum Old Spice either. The mashup between Terry Crews Old Spice commercials and Platinum Disco, the OP for Nisei Monogatari.
Yeah. Okay, to get back to Akizu.
Anyway, back to the actual story. But no, yeah. I hear that it's a lot more active and
kinetic. You know how, like, okay, so in the series proper, it does a lot of close-ups of Araragi's eyes, and sometimes other people's eyes, maybe, I don't remember. But it's usually just, like, his pupil kind of moving around really fast. It's not necessarily the entire, like, the eyelids and stuff, but in the... This is a really weird example, but it does a good job of contrasting the two. But in the movie, like, his entire eye, like, the area around his eye, it's all really heavily animated, and it's, like, reflecting things from the environment in front of him. And like I said, this is a weird example. I wish I hadn't picked this one. But just, like, the fidelity, the difference in levels of fidelity between the two is pretty high. Yeah, so the movie is way more animated than anything in the series. It also has, like, 3D backgrounds instead of, like, the show normally has just 2D backgrounds that are very abstract in nature, like, you know, solid colors everywhere. But this has 3D backgrounds, like, so it's kind of a weird, because I don't normally like 3D, but they make it work somehow very well. Like, everything about the movie looked good to me. Story-wise, it was good. Like, it was just kind of filling in information, like, about how Araragi becomes a vampire, like I was saying, and how he meets Oshino, and, so, unfortunately, like, it's hard to, I don't think it's, okay, let me start over. Since it's a three-part, a three-part movie series, and this is only, like, an hour long, so I'm assuming each other part is going to be an hour-ish, I don't think there's enough content for me to really say, like, what I think of the story as a whole, but what I watched was pretty, and it looked great, and... You know, it filled in holes in the story that I, you know, was previously making assumptions about. But then it ends as soon as Oshino offers to help him turn back into a human, and that's where the movie ends. So it's kind of
so
abrupt.
You don't feel like it was a complete story.
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely is not a complete story, and it's a strange decision that they cut it up into three parts. I'm assuming it's for budget reasons and so that they could, you know, split it up, make more money so that they could actually devote more funds to each individual piece. So at the end, they'll have this longer thing that is really excellent as opposed to doing it all at once and it would be like about half as good or whatever because they didn't spend as much time. Yeah.
When the assumptions that you made, were they just what the anime proved? Was there actually anything different that you're like, oh, I wasn't expecting that to be the reason?
When I say I made assumptions, I more mean that, like, I never really, like, filled in any details, per se, but I knew, like, you know that Araragi was previously human, obviously, he became a vampire, and it was the fault of Shinobu, aka Kiss Shot Acceleron Heart Underblade,
Orion.
Or something like that?
I forgot Orion.
Shit.
Kiss Shot Orion Areciola Heart Underblade. It's the worst name in all of fiction of all of human history.
Okay, you say worst, and I say most ridiculous.
Yeah,
those are not synonymous.
I think we're speaking the same language.
No. Let's just go with Shinobu, because that's what she later comes to be called. So yeah, you know that she made him into a vampire. He tried to become a human again, and it sort of only halfway worked, and as a result, she is stuck in this weakened state, and they sort of just get along from there. And this is the story of how that happened. Yeah, I mean, like I said, there's not a whole lot to it. It's very much the first part. It's like watching the first episode and reviewing Owari Monogatari that's all I've done, so.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting, because up until this point, it's actually never even really been shown, and Araragi, Koyomi's always just like, yeah, I got turned into a vampire over spring break, and then I got turned back, and now I've got these powers.
Yeah, and he talks about it a lot, like saying that the reason he's so close to Hanakawa, who's one of the characters, is because she helped him a lot, and she is introduced in this, but it's not yet clear how she helped him. That's the part I'm most interested in learning about, because that's the only part that I could not have figured out on my own so far, if that makes sense. Like, I knew Oshino was involved. I knew that Shinobu was involved, obviously. I knew Araragi was involved, and I could sort of piece together that, like, okay, something happened. But Hanakawa is just sort of like a piece to the puzzle, and I don't know where it fits. And I'm really interested to see how that comes around in the next two parts. Hopefully I won't have to wait too long, but I know that I will.
I mean, whatever. I've been waiting for the rebuild movies from Evangelion since 2007. Like, shit takes time, yo.
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking maybe the reason why they didn't start off with that is because I guess you don't really need it to be explained so explicitly.
It doesn't
detract from Bakemonogatari, which is pretty good when I watched it ages ago. But so.
Yeah, it does not. Like, that. This information that these movies will tell, they are not. It is not necessary to appreciate anything they have made so far in the anime. Anyway, like I said, the books go in a different order than the anime series. So it could be completely different in the books.
Yeah, but I mean, I did think that it was kind of odd that they were making a movie about that, because it does seem like the least intellectual and least, like, thematically dense thing of getting turned into a vampire.
Yeah, right.
But sort of shows, they're just using the movie to get lots of money and make something that's visually spectacular, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, and that sort of shows in the way that the series is, or in the way that the movie is presented, like, compared to the series. Again, there's a big difference in that in the series, there's a lot of Araragi monologuing, or a lot of really long conversations between him and another character, whereas this movie opens up with like 15 minutes of silence, or not silence, but like nobody's talking. It's just like environmental noises and, you know, footsteps and stuff, which is completely different from how Bakemonogatari starts, which is just like him talking about, I don't remember exactly, but it's like apparitions, or I think it's him talking about how he ran into a girl. What's her face? Help me, Ben.
Wait, which girl?
The long Shinjo Gahara. There we go.
Oh, yeah.
Shinjo Gahara Hitagi, you mean?
Yeah, I couldn't remember her name.
Actually, as much as I make fun of Shinobu's vampire name, I love most of the names in Bakemonogatari. They have this kind of mouthfulness that is really, really charming. Senjo Gahara especially.
Yeah, they got good, they got some good mouthfeel.
Yeah, I agree. Mouthfeel. That's my most inane comment for this podcast. Viewers, listeners, mark this down with a wax pencil on your sheet.
I mean, it is. I mean, I understand what you mean because they have like a good rhythm to them. Like, Koyomi Adadagi is a fun thing to say, and then you get you even have a character making fun of that name, like Adadadagi Kun. Oh, I bit my tongue. Whatever.
Yeah, but even like Kanbaru and Hanagawa. Yeah, they all. It's good names. Good names.
I mean, I think that's what the best part of the series is. I mean, like I said, I've only watched Bakemonogatari. But that was certainly like the biggest takeaway for me was the sort of rhythm and flow and pace of the conversation was unlike any other anime, really. And it really does center a lot on that. So I really enjoy that. As I want to watch more, but I just fucking haven't got around to it. It's too big now. Yeah, I just can't be asked.
Yeah, a lot.
You want to be counterculture. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I've said this before on the podcast, but I watched Bakemonogatari and was kind of like, enjoyed it, but it had a really gross patina to it with all the, like the sex and the shiny boobs.
Yeah.
Took me.
You finish your thought and I'll just jump in with something at the end.
I was just going to say, and Nisimonogatari, is that even worse? But it, by dialing it up, I could see what they were doing with it and how they're using the over-sexualization of characters in the Monogatari series to do something. And I think the Monogatari series second season, as it's awkwardly called, is possibly one of the best 26 episodes of anime made in the past decade. And I think it's brilliant. But the problem is you have to kind of like Apocalypse Now or Predator, like just like sink into the mud and coat yourself with it, and then suddenly it makes a lot more sense, because it is asking a very high price of admission to watch this kind of like ostensibly gross exploitative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a very smart series, and it cares deeply about language and words and how the customary use of words can create different meanings and how something can drift from its sense by use and familiarity. I like that a lot about it.
Yeah. So to counter everything you just said, in the movie, I think half the budget went into increasing Hanakawa's breast size. Her boobs are way bigger than they've ever been, and she already has a large bust.
She's already the bustiest one, yeah.
Yeah, and
which one's that? Is that the cat girl? Or is that
the cat girl? Yeah,
the cat girl.
Yeah, and, she is stupid bub.
Yeah, so sorry. They're way bigger in the movie, and they like, and there's a that's all I wanted to say. I don't want to go any further.
And I mean, but there's like a way of. Because what they're doing there is they're putting you inside Araragi's head by over-sexualizing everything around you. And it's only once you get the perspective outside of Araragi that you're like, oh, he's just kind of a shitty high school boy scumbag. And he thinks he's a hero, but really he's checking out, you know, boobs. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Movie makes it very clear that when the camera is focusing on Hanakawa's assets, it like goes back and forth between that and Adagi's eye, so you know for sure. And the series does a lot of that too, so it becomes increasingly obvious that it's just Adagi, he's a pervert. Although I disagree with your assessment that he's a complete scumbag. I think that he is actually trying to help people out of the goodness of his heart, not just because he likes boobs.
I probably just used the wrong adjective, because I don't think he's a complete scumbag, but I think as he exists now, he's kind of a bad person, a needless martyr, and like he has good intentions, and those good intentions shine through usually by the end of the show, but by the end of the arc in the show. But I do think like it's a lot of the best fiction does let the protagonist sell themselves to you, and then let the events that ensue allow you to modify that impression. I think the Monogatari series does it very well, where the first Bakemonogatari is almost entirely from Araragi's point of view, and he has a very clear idea of who he is, and the rest of the show is discovering that varies somewhere between slightly delusional and just a complete fake. And it's no mistake that, you know, the titles are like Monster Story and Fake Story. And stuff as like these ideas of it's not just talking about the the people who are afflicted with these supernatural ailments, but also the people who try to fix them. Anyway.
I mean, there's also something to be said about the way half of the women, like, toy with his perversion and tease him a lot. So, it's not...
Yeah, yeah, there's that too. And that's
not
actually
the only one who's feeding into this. But, yeah,
that was
I mean,
the weirdest thing about Owari Monogatari is that I did not remember Kanbaru, who is a ostensibly queer underclassman who likes to mess with Araragi. And she was a lot more aggressive in Owari Monogatari than I remember her in any of the other things. And I wondered if that was an intentional thing or the perspective of the storytelling or some sort of small scale shift. I don't know. I mean, it's fun to think about.
Yeah, I haven't watched Owari yet, but I don't know.
She's super aggressive.
Okay, well.
You haven't seen anything yet, okay. which is saying a lot.
Yeah,
right.
That's the
I mean, it is interesting because yes.
Basketball. Sorry.
All these sports are the same to you Brits. There's cricket, soccer, and every other sport.
Yeah, pretty much.
What I've been watching, two shows in turn. One of them I've finished and one of them I've had a lot of trouble getting started with. And the first one, which I started actually after the second one, but finished first, which gives you a hint, is Show by Rock, which is a story about a shy girl who loves music but is too shy to join a band, getting sucked inside a cell phone game, and becoming a superstar. And it's made by Sanrio, the Hello Kitty people.
No way.
And it airs in the time slot. It airs at a late night time slot that's traditionally male-oriented seinen stuff. But it's almost entirely female cast. And it's got a lot of like friendship and love and working together. And I got turned on to it by one of my preferred anime bloggers because he said that, his upshot was that it's basically half Sound Euphonium and half Macross 7. since I haven't seen either of those anime, that didn't actually mean anything to me. But like, the show involves all these different bands, including like a really hilarious Visual K band where everyone is like a delusional idiot, except for this one guy who's like a salaryman who's like working in a spare job. But he's like the one who loves music the most. There's a lot of really great character interactions. And it's really nice that like the message of just like, oh, if you're good at something, you have to be willing to fail at it or expose your vulnerability to actually grow is a lot more sincerely delivered than in most anime. And most of all, it's just attractive. There's like weird CG sequences where they turn into like Hello Kitty characters to play their music, but the music's good and the art's really interesting, and it sells you on being like K-On, and it's nothing like K-On, which is nice because I mean K-On rules its spot in the anime canon, and no one can deny it. And there's also a band that's led by a woman inside of a giant cat Daruma. Called Tsurizura Naru Ayatsuri Mugenen, which is supposed to be like a make fun of like an, they're all references. This is a make fun to an Enka themed band, and the Visual K band is called Shingan Crimsons with a Z. So yeah, it's great. But anyway, I finished it and I was really enjoying it. And then the ending was kind of weird because throughout the entire anime, I've told you this before, Andy, you and I talked about this, but throughout the anime, there's like a bad guy who wants to like control all music and like basically like lock down all the most talented artists and make the music industry and decide this video game his own like little private fief. And everyone throughout the entire anime is like, well, why don't we just go like beat him up and kill him? Or it's a cutesy anime where everyone's like an animal person. So not kill him, but like beat him up and make him leave town and never be seen again. And the wise people are like, oh no, you can't do that. Like, he represents an idea, and you can't defeat an idea just by killing the person who has that idea. Like, the idea will continue to exist. We've got to prove that it doesn't work, and we've got to defeat it as an ideological source. And I was like, oh, okay. So I mean, it's kind of a like very obvious way to like keep them from just like going to his tower in episode 2 and beating him up. If that were possible. But then at the end, they're playing like, they're like, oh, we're going to defeat him with music. And they like play a concert and it doesn't work. And so they beat him up. And that works. And that was a very weird, it felt like the writers had kind of forgotten one of their themes at the end was like, oh, you can't defeat ideas. And like, oh, fuck it. We paint ourselves into a corner. I guess you have to just like beat them up. But I mean, Andy pointed out, I think you said that like they're making a second season. And so like, there's no conflict if they defeat the idea of like an evil businessman taking over music, which is the band plot line for all band movies and TV shows ever in all band universes. But it's very cute. I liked it a lot. And it's only 12 episodes. It airs really easy. It's on Funimation's channel and on Hulu if you're going to watch it. And yeah, I mean, it's great to watch while eating food or playing a cell phone game, or because it doesn't require that much attention, but it is like visually interesting and cute and fun.
Sweet.
Cool.
Thoughts, comments? Questions, answers.
I mean, I'd have to watch it. It does sound something that I'd probably quite enjoy. To be fair, I don't hate that kind of shit. But yeah, no, I don't have anything.
Then I guess I did my job good. And like, I really wish that there was a spinoff about the Visual K band, because it's like there's like the hot blooded guy, and there's a guy who thinks he's a god, and there's a guy who like is really into like sword stuff, and then there's a guy who just like he plays the drums. He comes back from work. He doesn't like when they fight because he's like, oh, this is my free time activity. You guys need to stop fucking around. Like, it's about the music, isn't it? And they're like, oh, no, this god will not bear this treatment. And he's like, look, I've got to do my taxes tonight, so we got to finish this practice. And he's the best character.
He's my favorite already.
Yes, it's actually, there's a screen cap of it, like, where he's like, I'm organizing my receipts right now. And they're like all in the background, like striking poses. And yeah, that's what made me watch this show. And that was really great.
That makes me more interested. So,
yeah, I like it.
And I was going to talk about Simone, but I'll just say that I'm watching another anime that's a lot more serious and a bit more dry from the early 2000s called Simone. And it's a world where God exists and he favors this one country above all other countries. And also all people in this fictional world are born women and decide whether or not to be women or to change into man on their 18th birthday. And so it's like a very interesting fictional world, but it is unwatchable because it's like,
so kind of
the main
like
character
as in real life shark. Sorry,
I guess I'm learning something. Is this part of your podcast knowledge that you gained recently?
No, sharks can change sex. They start
well, so can like toads. That's the Jurassic Park plot, right?
Is it? I don't know. I haven't watched Jurassic Park.
They can't what? No. Stop the podcast. You have not watched Jurassic Park?
No, I haven't. I've like some films like Back to the Future. I have not watched. Well, I've watched Back to the Future quite recently, but I haven't watched like these films because they're so ingratiated into like modern culture. I don't really need to watch them to understand them. I think I've maybe seen like half an hour of the first one. I haven't seen it all. Or maybe I have.
Don't watch
I
the rest of them. The rest of them are garbage. The new one's garbage. But the first Jurassic Park is like the height of Spielberg's craft as a filmmaker. It's not necessarily like, oh, it's a beloved beloved childhood movie that everyone has no taste about. It's not The Goonies.
Jurassic Park. The Goonies is terrible. There you go. I've said it. I hated The Goonies. I watched it a couple of years ago. It's fucking dire.
Yeah, The Goonies is only good if you saw it as a kid. But Jurassic Park is legitimately like Spielberg at the height of his craft as a blockbuster filmmaker. And like right. A lot of people say that's Jaws, but I think Jaws taken one more step as Jurassic Park. Like there's no reason you shouldn't have seen Jurassic Park. Who cares about being contrary?
If it's any consolation, I haven't seen any Terminator movies, and the only alien movie I've seen is Prometheus.
Yeah, I mean, I've
how,
seen.
How
all
am
of
I
the
having?
I've seen Aliens 1 to 4, and I have not also seen. I've not seen that other film you mentioned, which I've just forgotten about. I haven't seen Predator.
Terminator.
I've seen Terminator 2.
Predator's garbage. Don't worry about. And Terminator 2 is a better version of Terminator 1. I'm throwing out the hot bombs here, and
I don't
Alien
think that's that
and
hot
Aliens
bomb.
That's
are a fairly common.
Really, you don't think so?
Yeah, everyone says Terminator 2 is better than 1.
Everything. I also think Predator 2 is better than Predator 1, and that does catch me some shade. So
I'm going to say I enjoyed Aliens 3, and I know that everybody hated Alien 3. I really enjoyed it. There you go. Said it.
I like Alien 3. I like Aliens 3. I mean,
I actually think it's probably one of my favorites. I really liked Alien 3. It was kind of garbage.
Aliens 3 was originally going to take place on like a wood planet, like a planet made entirely out of wood. And what? The alien would get there, and because the aliens like saliva and blood melt stuff, like there was this really big danger that like if it bled, it could destroy the entire planet.
What?
They threw out that script for obvious reasons.
What? I'm never watching Alien now. You've ruined it.
Have you guys read
Alien
Saga?
Is not.
I'm kidding.
Have you guys read Saga?
Nope.
The first like 8-9 issues, I fell off of it at the end.
Right, because there's a spaceship made out of a tree.
Yeah, I've read that far.
Yeah, I love Saga.
Let's get back on track.
Right, yeah.
Okay, anyway, Andy, your homework is to watch Jurassic Park, because like I would not like I can't name a specific instance, but Jurassic Park saved my life at some point. Like I've watched Jurassic Park, and it changed the future and kept me alive at some point in my. In my maybe multiple times, like you've got to watch Jurassic Park.
I just know all the bits from it. Like I know the hand. I know you didn't say the magic word. Like I know everything. I know the film.
Those are all the not good parts. Those are all the parts where Spielberg, like it's the flow, not the moments, that make Jurassic Park great. Let's get off of this. I'm gonna blow a gasket. I can't take this. But so no. How did we get from Sea Moon to
you were talking about how people change genders, and then he was talking about sharks, and then you were like, oh, like in Jurassic Park, and then he was like, oh, I've never seen Jurassic Park, and then it was a whole disaster.
I've basically, actually that kind of spoils Jurassic Park, but it came out in 1993, right?
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
That sounds right.
I was five. I give up.
5 is the exact time that you're supposed to be going nuts over Jurassic Park. Anyway, the important thing, whatever, it's fine. It's so fine. The important thing is like, no, they don't get to change. It's like you make a decision. And so like a lot of these characters are actually like, the one way that you can avoid having to make a decision at age 18 is to be part of the military force that like flies these like God empowered craft. Like, and it's like a distant invisible deity. So like, God in the like modern Judeo-Christian sense, like, but has these craft like can be used to like to cast these incredibly powerful spells that will destroy like whole cities, and the only way that you can avoid having to make a decision about whether you want to stay a woman or be a man is to enter into a mostly platonic lesbian relationship with another woman and fly one of these craft. And so you have all these characters who are kind of in these relationships that they're kind of forced to be in because they're part of this armed forces, and they're often in this unit because they're not sure if they're a man or a woman, and they're scared at making the wrong decision and basically living the rest of their life with gender dysphoria. And all this sounds really interesting, right? But what happens is the main character loses her partner, and the partner is so obviously marked for death. She's like, oh, I'm going to be the strongest, and I believe in love and friendship, and I fight hard. I'm like, you are dead. You are beyond dead. And so she dies doing like trying to like match her strength with the best of them. And so the main character goes in her room, locks the door, and does not leave her room for 8 episodes.
Jesus.
And she's the commander of the unit, so the unit's like grounded. And everyone's like, man, I really wish that that Nemeril would get her stuff together and either leave this unit or get back in the cockpit. I mean, it's so bizarre, but they're all fine with it. They're like, oh, well, I'll do some training on my own, and oh, I hope there's no conflict near us because like we can't fly. It's like in Evangelion, if Shinji's like, no, I don't want to get into the robot, and everyone's like, okay, yeah, well, we can wait. And like the angels are like smashing Tokyo 3. And everyone's like, man, I really hope Shinji gets over his emotional issues soon so he can pilot this Evangelion and save us all. And it's bizarre.
That would have made Ava better.
It would not. Believe me, from someone who just watched an anime, like I was using Show by Rock to amp myself up to watch an episode of Sea Moon because I'd like, like it put me in a good mood, and I'd like watch an anime where nothing's happening, and it felt okay to watch an episode of another anime where nothing happens.
So why are you still watching it?
Because I hear it's good, and I really like the ideas, and I'm living for remember back in like the late 90s and the early 2000s when like anime sometimes like took forever to get started and get to the point?
Mm-hmm.
And like this is obviously like one of the clearest examples of this. And so I'm kind of waiting for like episode 12, episode 14, like get into a really good stride because it's taken so long to warm up that that's what I'm hoping is going to be the benefit of it. If it's not, I'm going to be shitting all over this anime next podcast. But I really do like this idea of like, it's such a different world. Like where gender politics are, they're still there, but they're made so different because everyone is born a woman. And actually, in an interesting production side thing, all the voice actors are women. Even for the men characters, they just pick deeper voiced women to voice. And so everyone's a woman. Like even the men kind of like this like, they like take the like the Bishi boy like build, and so it's all the men kind of look like women and they're voiced by women, and it's just like very a lot of female energy in there, and I want to see them go somewhere with it. And thankfully in episode 9 Nemeril gets her shit together and is like, yeah, I've been wasting too much time and I need to get back in the cockpit and like fight for what my stupid marked for death friend believed in. And yeah, I mean, the other protagonist is like this girl who's like, yeah, I love fighting. And like, I don't really know what my purpose in life is, but I'm hoping that by fighting, I'll find it out. And it's like, yes. Like, can you go talk to the other character and be like, hey, you don't have to know what life is about. Just get in the cockpit and just get in the cockpit. Anyway.
I wonder how they fill out their like hospital forms and stuff and like visas and stuff like that. Do they have male, female, undecided, or do they not really?
You're
get
a woman,
into
and
that?
You're a woman until you choose to be a man, and you go to the spring, and like this lady in like super weird, like kind of green tinged goth makeup is like, "Are you a man or a woman?" And they say, "Oh, I think I'm a man," or "Oh, I want to stay a woman." And this one girl actually early on comes in, and because she like was hoping to like get inspiration at the spring. And she gets in there and he's like, are you a man or a woman? And she's like, I don't know. And like the woman shrugs and leaves, and like the girl looks down and she's a man, and she like cries and she's like, oh, I guess I'm Arif now, because they're all their names end in vowels. And if they become a man, they just change the name to have an F at the end. And so Eru becomes Arif, and she's like, oh, I'm really not happy about this, but I guess the spring knew what I should be. Like, I'm talking about this, I'm like, I'm getting excited to watch an episode, but then, like, nothing happens in the show.
So wait. The spring must be, like, she must be really busy. If she has to choose everybody's gender, or like...
Only for this one country. Everyone else, it's actually kind of fucked up. Because this one country, like, has this spring that's, like, run by basically, like, an avatar of God, as far as you can tell. Right. And everyone else like wants these engines because like everyone else is living in this like really dark, like hyper Dickensian, like industrial nightmare, and they're all born women, and this one country is like occupying the spring, and so they're using like chemicals and like surgery to make some of them men, and everyone's like in incredible pain and sick, and it's again interesting sounding, right?
Yeah,
like, this
that
one
sounds
country
cool,
ha-
kind but, of, but yeah, not-
sounds cool.
Yeah, I mean like as in an. Like,
yeah, no, I
an idea. As a norm of like, yeah, bad wording. Yeah.
But like, I love all these ideas, and so I'm just watching like an aggressively average show in execution because all these ideas are so interesting. This idea that what happens if like one country monopolizes this like divine power that seems implied to be meant for everybody, and like, and if they keep receiving that power, or are their actions legitimized, and like. Is violence in the name of God okay? Is violence using the tools of God okay? These are all questions that the show puts out there. And then it focuses on like a 19-year-old girl having a temper tantrum because her stupid friend did something stupid and got killed. And like I was sympathetic for 3, maybe 4 episodes, and by like 8 I was like done. And I was like, get in the robot, Shinji. Anyway, Andy, you've been watching stuff, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been watching a bunch.
I sound so
stuff.
Tired now.
That Wulong tea is running out, I see.
It is. I'm tired.
Yeah, I've been watching, I know you've been watching it as well, John, Osomatsu-san, mm-hmm. which is actually, it's actually been going for a while now, but it's a reboot of an old anime called Osomatsu Kun, which was made in 1966 was when it was originally aired, and then 1988. And it started off as them as kids, and then as 10-year-olds, then in fifth grade, and now they're just like neat 20s.
Yeah.
And it's basically a group of sextuplets who are all the same by like visually, but they all have like different characteristics, and it's just a mental ass comedy show with these like six septuplets, and it's
every episode is basically just a bunch of gags. So like, or not a bunch of gags, like a bunch of skits. That's the word. And so like, you go from a setting where like they're doing a Mad Max parody to like where they're just sitting around talking about like how to eat like a bag of chips or something, and like. It's hilarious. It's all just really funny, and I don't like. It's hard to explain comedy because, man, but it is really, really fucking funny. It does start off a little bit rough in the earlier episodes, but this season, like, it's every episode is so good. The thing I look most forward to every week.
Yeah, and the writing is like the way it's written is really interesting because, like, well, the first episode is just a complete parody of like
everything.
I think it's called. Everything. It's called like Imagine 1000% is like the big parody that's trying to be, where the idea is because they're old people, like they're an old anime, how they're going to be popular. So they try and be popular with the girls by creating basically like a reverse harem anime, and it's sort of like all your like bishoujo boys that everybody likes, but they are the bishoujo boys in the most ridiculous thing ever. And they just sort of like, they go to the top of a roof and they do a little sign and then they destroy a meteorite. And then Albert Einstein's and NASA being like, oh my God, they did it. They saved the world. And you're just like, what is going on? And then like Chibita comes, and who's like the guy who just makes Odin. Is that Chibita? No, it's not Chibita. It's, I can't remember the other guy, this big fat. Oh no, it is Chibita because he's got tiny.
Chibita, yeah. Chibita, yeah.
That was the joke. He has a tiny, tiny balls. And then he's like an Attack on Titan sort of thing, and it's just like a parody of like so many things, and it kind of got into financial trouble, so it's sort of already like controversial from the off, because that in itself got just like really bad, and also just a bad reflection of the rest of the anime as a whole.
Because it's nothing like the next episode.
nothing at all. And then like the and that got pulled, and that's not going to be in like the first DVD volumes. You're never going to see it anywhere else. So the actual first episode is just like a one-off like oddity, because, and is, I guess you can find it on like some torrents anywhere, but it's not on like Crunchyroll. They took it down everywhere
because they were afraid of being sued. Because I guess Japan doesn't have like strong fair use laws in their copyright stuff, so you can just sue anybody.
No, it is all like, yeah, you're supposed to like show respect to the property. Like the only way that you're allowed to use fair use is the only way fair use usually flies is if it's seen as like building the brand and like showing respect to the creators. Yeah. And so a lot of really mean-spirited parody.
This wasn't even mean-spirited though. It was just like throw everything at the wall and see what happens. Word. Yeah, I understand what you mean. It's just
The only time I could think of something like that is when they tried making the anime for High School Girl. Have you heard of that anime manga series?
No.
Tell us about it.
Okay, so it's kind of an average series, but kind of charming, where this guy just gets really angry at like they're like these little kids, like 10-year-olds or something, and they get really. He sort of finds out that this one girl in the class is fucking great at video games, and so he gets really sort of possessed and intent to beat her at sort of stuff like Street Fighter and other games like that. And it's kind of just sort of like a not sort of rom-com about him wanting to beat a girl at a video game, but he can't because he's just not as good as her and she's like pro level good. But the thing is that it uses real screens from like Street Fighter 2, Gradius, like all these other like popular games. And then when they turned it into an anime, the studio went to Capcom and was like, is it right if we use real screens? Is it right if we use real sounds? Is it right if we do this sort of stuff? And they went like, sure, but what is this anime? And then they're like, yeah, well, they told them, and they're like, so this is already a manga? Like, yeah, because they haven't told us and we didn't know. And then they sued them for money because They didn't, like, yeah, because they just use all this stuff without any sort of, like, approval and shit. So, yeah, and that then the manga got on hiatus, the anime got cancelled, and I don't know what's going on now. I think it came out of hiatus, but over some, like, real troubled water. So that's the only time I've heard something like that happen. But, yeah, like, certainly the writing style, it feels kind of like Monty Python in a way, because a lot of Monty Python is actually not very good, but the bits that are good are like fucking hilarious, and it reminds me of that because there's sort of like some which is like these little shorts, like the second episode is a bunch of little shorts where they just feel like they're just throwing whatever they can against the wall,
yeah, and
just
seeing sort of what
seeing
sticks.
What
yeah.
sticks, and then they're like, okay, so this worked but this stuff didn't, and then they sort of the next couple of episodes just iterates on what makes those things really good. And yeah. it just like, and especially, and like, that's quite evident, I think, with like stuff like the Joshimatsu, where they just are like girls and they just chat about like really weird sort of stuff about like not falling in love and all that kind of stuff. It's just really funny, like genuinely well written funny, like, and not just sort of like weird non sequiturs or like just randomly throwing things out as. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it's really good.
They do randomly throw a lot of stuff out, but like they take it to a good end, I think, most times. And yeah, the earlier episodes are a lot more experimental, and they're just like you said, trying to see what sticks. But they've done a really, really good job of identifying what works and what doesn't work and making it good, like just making it better and better every episode. So good.
The best example is Matsukart, the Matsukart episode, where they are all doing a huge race to see who'd become the main character of the next episode, because one of the other characters gets fed up of being the sideline joke as opposed to the main character. And that episode is honestly one of the funniest things I've watched in a long time. Like, the references of, like, Mad Max, Mario Kart, and all these sort of things, they're just, like, so thick and fast, but they're just so well done, and they don't really stop to give you a breather. They just cut to the next thing, because they're like, oh, this, if you don't get this, if this doesn't work, then it doesn't matter, because we'll just cut to the next sort of stupid thing. Where that, and that also the episode is really well animated, like that fight where he's like
the fight between Osamatsu and what's it, the tooth guy, I always forget his name, but
he pulls his cheeks apart and it looks ridiculous, but it's so well done.
Yeah, it's very cartoony. Like, they are taking advantage of the medium more than I'd say most anime does. Like, they know what they're doing. It's not always so fantastically
animated. And it's sort of no surprise that...
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's probably because it's just quite simple characters, right? So I feel that maybe it's not as hard to draw as other anime. It's easier to animate and quicker
to
animate.
Like, most of the skits are pretty, like, sedentary. Like, it's just them sitting around talking about stupid shit. But, then they have every now and then just, like, something ridiculous. Like, the Mahjong episode that last week was just, like, they really got into it. And it was hilarious. I don't even know how to play Mahjong. And I know you do, but, like, I just, oh, man, it's so good.
The best, some of those jokes kind of went over my head, but when, like, Jushimatsu was, like, the Furiten master or something, that really made me laugh. Furiten is when you fuck up a discard and just can't win, so you have to pay, like, 4,000 or 40,000 to everybody, and it's a very rare thing that happens if you're playing, but that's regardless. Also, did you know that Jushimatsu's Daisuke Ono, which is a really weird, like, really weird place, like, character, voice actor placement, because Daisuke Ono is like more serious roles, not a goofy ass like
idiot. Yeah, I did hear because they had that like special episode where it was a bunch of the like all the voice actors were talking about the episode or something, and he talked about like, oh, he only ever does serious roles, and this is the first time he's done something so goofy and he just loves it.
I mean, he's best known as Jojo from the third arc. He's the third Jojo.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, really weird. It's a damn good show. The other weird comedy show, if you don't mind me just quickly segueing, is I've been watching Oshiete Gyalko-chan, or Teach Me Gyalko-chan, I think is called in English. And it's sort of like, I started off and it's just about sort of like weird female-based jokes. Like, I don't want to... See, this is the problem. I read it. Like, when I watched it, I was like, okay, so the first episode, they talk about, like, the size of a woman's Arola or something like that. And it's like, this is really weird, like, female-based comedy that doesn't feel like it's just trying to be pervy, but actually feels like it's a joke that sort of women can understand and relate to and they find it funny. But then, like, and also just Galco-chan is like this ridiculous looking character with huge boobs, but she also has appropriate proportions for a woman with huge boobs. She's not like a thin waist like Nami or like Fujiko character. She's actually kind of bulky, which is really nice to like, and nice and refreshing as far as anime goes. But, and it is, for all those full concerns, actually quite funny. I found myself laughing at a lot of the stuff that, if it was sort of any other show, if it wasn't just felt like a purely like female based show, it wouldn't be as funny and kind of have a creepy outlook to it, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
jokes about women's boob sizes are never that funny in my eyes, but the way that they do it in Galco-chan is kind of funny and always made me laugh. And then I kind of found out that, well, I just assumed it was kind of written by a woman originally because it was originally a manga, but I don't know, like, I found out recently that it's a guy who wrote it, and now my opinion of it has kind of changed into back into the this is now slightly creepy again. I don't know if you guys have ever experienced something like that, but it's weird. It's good though.
I mean, yeah, no, I've been there where you feel a strong female voice from a piece of writing and that makes you like it, and then you realize it's just a guy and it suddenly becomes different.
Yeah.
In its aspect.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know, give it a go. I quite enjoyed it, but and it's also quite short, which is another praise of it, like another good thing. It's only like 5-6 minutes, so if you don't like it, you've only wasted 6 minutes of your life.
yeah,
but no, that's all I've been watching. I'll shut up about weird comedies.
Cool. It's good because I actually don't tend to watch many anime comedies, so we balance each other well.
Yeah, also, I want to go back to Osomatsu-san a little bit. Director for Osomatsu-san was previously a director on Gintama, like for lots and lots of episodes, and they definitely have a very similar approach to humor. Like, one of the things that I really love about both shows is that the writers and the way that, like, the, you know, everything about it is just really good at escalating the situation into absurd degrees. Like,
yeah,
there's a character, Katamatsu-kun, or San, Katamatsu, whatever am I saying? Whatever. Katamatsu is one of the characters, and he likes to dress up to look real cool, and he thinks that he's the coolest guy, and everybody's just always making fun of him for it because they don't buy into his act. And then...
And then when someone questioned him, he was like, oh, it's the porcupine effect. Like, you get hurt more the closer you are.
Ichimatsu is, like, this sort of, like, dark and gloomy character. Mm-hmm. He just, like, he's...
He's my favorite.
Yeah, he's my favorite.
Actually, love it.
Both of those are my favorite. And Ichimatsu is, he finds it very hard to talk to people, but he loves cats. But then, like, he sees Katamatsu sleeping on a couch, and he's like, I kind of want to see what it feels like to dress up like him. And so he puts on, like, the leather jacket and the sunglasses, and then one of their brothers walks in, and it's just so fucking funny watching them, like, because he thinks it's Katamatsu and he's like talking to him like he is, and Ichimatsu's like, I don't know how to respond to any of this. It's so good.
Yeah, and so he tries all the while worrying that him talking will wake up Katamatsu, who will then like look at him and be like, why are you doing this, like realizing the game is up. And then he wakes up, he walks out, and then he wakes up. And then he's, instead of him like going crazy, he's just like, oh, finally, somebody wants to be like me. I understand how you feel.
Yeah. Oh, it's so, so good. That's one of my favorite skits by far. Oh, God.
That was amazing. And then also like the surprisingly dark one where it's sort of like his mum and dad are having a divorce. And so they had to choose between what Matsu they had to choose between, and obviously they all wanted to lead like neat lives, so they all were trying to
like jobless, like ostensibly adults, but not really. And
well, they're in their 20s. They are totally adults. They're just jobless nothings.
Exactly.
And and so they all try and win over their mum in like really kind of gross but hilarious ways that, yeah, they're like...
There's one guy who's like, I don't need to live with you. I'll find my own way. And then she's like, instantly picks him. And then everybody else is like, why did he get to do it first? So good.
I mean, I even like the sort of stuff which isn't about Osamatsu. I quite like the Dion guy. He's like this weird, like, big character who all he goes is Dion. That's all he says. But he's kind of creepy and like this weird, like, godly character in some ways who just knows.
He, I mean, he wasn't like originally in the first few episodes, like maybe the first season even, like all the side characters were kind of like they were trying to make skits wholly devoted to them, and you know, just like following Dion guy and Decapon, who's just like this big fat guy who only wears pants, and those skits didn't work out too well for me anyway. I like those are my least favorite skits, but then they figured out that the best way to use them is to pit them against the brothers, and oh man, yeah, like you said, Dion guy, like he's played off as a literal god at one point, and it's just
and then also there's that bit when the Dion guy is created in a factory, and then the next couple of episodes the Dion guy is just in the background of everything because he's just the in the lore he's just been made 1,000 times by the Osamatsus, by like the sextuplets, like some really weird, like, but great stuff goes on in that show. And yeah, it takes a while to really pick up, but I really like it. I really love the Chibuta episode. Like, Chibuta's like the guy who makes Oden, and then he has that flower that he waters and turns into this beautiful woman. So I think, is it Kadamatsu who tries to do the same thing and then pours like sake on it and turns into like...
I think it is. Oh, man.
This sort of like weird... hag, to be rude, but like really sort of like ugly character in both visual looking and character traits, by just, you know, being really abrasive and rude and just wanting like his money and all this kind of stuff, but then using the same thing of like, well, you brought me to life, so you should give me all this stuff. And it's so really good. Honestly, right. Like one of the best. We'll shut up about Osamatsu now. It's so good.
Ben's looking really bored right now, but I promise it's amazing.
I'm looking up varnish pencils to restain my table. So I'm having a great time. You guys can talk about this anime.
No, I think we're, I think
sounds
we're
great.
Yeah.
Well, then let's go ahead and take a break, and then we'll come back with our pitches for what we're going to watch in the next podcast.
Sweet.
Wicked.
And we're back. Now, for the second half of our podcast, we are going to pitch you a bunch of great or greatly awful anime that we could be watching and that you could be watching with us for our next podcast episode. I zealously have volunteered to go first with... the 1996 movie based on the Clamp manga, X, also known as X-1999, to confuse you completely. I know we didn't really like watching Dallas that much because Dallas was kind of bad. And by kind of, I mean it was bad. There's no need for qualifiers. But
I mean, I quite liked it.
I mean, yeah, I liked it, but if I could like take that time and put it towards a different, better movie, I probably would.
Yeah.
But like X is possibly, it's bad. It's possibly the most campy anime I have ever watched. What it is. Okay. So there's this Clamp manga, about this apocalyptic thing where this young boy comes home and basically realizes that he's like, comes home to Tokyo and realizes he's the messiah of the apocalypse, and he finds that there's these groups of people, the dragons of heaven, fighting to like keep the earth preserved, and there's these dragons of earth trying to destroy the earth, and that he's like the deciding factor because they're evenly balanced, and whichever side he chooses will be the one to triumph. And it's a very long-running series. It started in I had the Wikipedia article open and then I closed it. It started in 1992. And it ran until 2003 when the level of violent content caused it to be dropped from Kadokawa Shoten's publication and went on indefinite hiatus.
Jesus.
And despite that, it's been very beloved for being like a very like tense, involved, complicated, like highly political, but also like very stylish action story. And so what happened in 1996 is Kadokawa partnered with Madhouse and a bunch of other production studios to make a movie of the first 8 volumes. And each volume is 200 pages each. So that's 1600 pages of dense political drama, highly character-driven drama, compressed into a 93-minute movie. And what basically happens is not only is stuff highly incoherent, but just like there is something happening every 20 seconds. What first happens in the movie is the boy is dreaming of his like mother calling him back to Tokyo, but she's naked and surrounded by rose petals.
What?
And by the end of this conversation, which can't last more than 2.5 minutes, she explodes into like messy blood. And that begins an amazing drinking game where you take a shot every time someone is decapitated or reduced to their constituent parts, and you will be plastered by 40 minutes in. It is unbelievably violent. It is, well, each of the dragons of the heaven and earth have an element under their command, but there's 7 each, so it's 14 total. They run out of elements about halfway through, and so you have the guy whose special power is paper. You have this guy whose special power is water, a guy whose special power is storms, a guy whose special power is thunder, and a guy whose special power is rain.
Wait, what?
You have two fire guys. You have a girl whose special power is computers.
So there was rain and thunder, and then also storm. Isn't that just a combination of rain and thunder?
Well, maybe there's subtlety in the original Japanese that I'm missing, but...
Isn't that like Captain Planet, who's one of the fifth element is love or something? Have you seen Captain Planet?
I mean,
yeah, that's
I've seen Captain Planet. I've also seen Fifth Element, where that is also the spoiler at the end. But like, no, it's so self-serious, and it believes so earnestly. Like, one guy's special power is he has a dog who teleports. It's not even an element. It's just like you're laughing, okay. And it tries so hard and believes so firmly, and it's beautifully animated. Granted, in the weird like stretched out alien style that is Clamp character designs. But it's directed by a bunch of people who are basically like the B team at Madhouse, directed by the co-founder, and it's this bizarrely incoherent mess, and it's absolutely despised among true fans of the manga. And they later, I believe, in early 2000, made a TV show that is like 36 episodes and covers the same material, just to show you how compressed the events are. But yeah, it's this bizarre, engrossing masterpiece, and it's one of these, like, by masterpiece I mean disasterpiece, actually, because it's just like, it's one of those movies where you see it and you're like, oh no, this isn't going to happen, and it doesn't happen. Something weirder, even more bizarre, happens. And it doesn't help that it's also just like misogynistic in a way that's really hard to take seriously at all, because like this boy has like a childhood friend who he's like feels fated to be with, and he just dreams incessantly of her getting beheaded over and over, and he has like all these dreams of her dying in horrible ways. Jesus. and like one of the few female characters, like actually two of the female characters are prostitutes or sex workers, so it's just I'm saying that this isn't going to be something that will elevate the genre or the medium of anime, but it is incredibly fun to watch, and no two people come away from it with the same opinion, because it's just such a hot mess in a way that I can't even convey. And I'm telling you, like, someone lights a train on fire at some point in the anime, and that's possibly my favorite part. It's incredible. It's incredible.
It sounds great, and I just also like to add that the theme song composition by some sort of genius work of cross collaboration was done by X Japan, which I find quite funny.
Yeah, they apparently were originally named X, and they changed themselves to X Japan to broaden their brand.
just in case people confuse like where they're from.
Yeah, they're wow. They are late 80s like. Yeah, Visual K style. They're actually one of the Visual K pioneers.
Yeah.
This texting sounds mildly influenced by Violence Jack, if you've ever heard of that.
I wouldn't be surprised. One of the weird things I'm sad... Oh, go ahead.
Is extremely bizarre and hyper-violent and surreal and like just has these weird moments of... At one point, there's a kid who... has sex with a tiger whose tongue is a tentacle.
What?
Yeah, I mean, reading the synopsis, it does sound very similar because it is this idea that it's interesting because like the idea is like, do we save the world or destroy it? But the fact is, no matter what, Tokyo is completely destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
It will be destroyed at the end of it, and there's like these recurring visions. It's, I mean. What I was kind of talking about with Simone applies here because you have this sense that like there are genuinely smart ideas under here, but it's completely bungled in an execution because you're covering eight chapters of an extremely dense manga in 90 minutes, and they cut very little, and so it's just like things are incessantly happening. There's no coherence to any of it, and so you have this idea of like a very like atmospheric. Like this kind of like grim apocalypticism of like the world's going to be destroyed one way or another, but how is it going to be destroyed or how is it going to be transformed? But yeah, but it's completely lost because for some reason, Madhouse and Rintaro, the director who ended up, he's the director and he wrote the script and screenplay. So he's completely at fault for this, like focused way too much on like just all of like the most bloody perverse things in this, and it's great. And it also unfortunately was licensed and released by Manga Entertainment, who's known for mangling products too. So it also has a not terribly good subtitle track. I don't know, I have had fun. I think I've watched it maybe like four or five times. I bought it for like $3 at a used video store, and it's paid itself over 10 times over. So not going to be great. Like, I mean, I know Andy that you have something that you think is legitimately good, and you too, John, but like this is the most charming piece of shit you'll watch in anime history.
No, that sounds good. Like that sounds fun. Certainly. To move on from fun. Yeah, I guess a kind of less fun in some ways anime that I kind of I think we should watch next is Natsuyuki Rendezvous. Now, it does have a death in it, namely the death of one of the main protagonist's husbands, but it touches upon sort of something that what reminded me most was when we watched Rurouni Kenshin, the movies. Like the idea and concept of like love after someone's death or somebody that they really loved dies and finding love again is something that is very rarely touched on, even in like most modern like TV shows or films. And Natsuyuki Rendezvous is pretty much exactly that. There's a main protagonist, Hazuki, he falls in love with a flower shop owner, Rocker, and he tries to sort of woo her kind of successfully, and then finds out that when he goes to her flat, I can't remember why he goes to her flat, but he goes to her flat just because he started working at the flower shop, and then he finds that he can see her dead husband as a ghost, whilst nobody else can. And it's this kind of like semi-serious, semi-like, I personally don't think it's one of the best. Like, it's certainly not up there, but what I really like, it does do some interesting things with, like I said, like love after somebody's death, and doing some interesting things to be with, like, just that sort of stuff. And then also like how her husband feels sort of being this ghost who, ever since he's died, has just watched over her and watched her like you know, cry and then grow and then sort of become someone that he can't affect. He can just sort of sit there and watch. And it feels like it kind of misses on some beats, but it also feels like it hits on others. And certainly some of the comedy things go off a bit, but it really, I don't know, it stuck with me as something that maybe hasn't been given enough attention, because it certainly was like, it's a manga that finished and then turned into an anime and is only 11 episodes, and it just told what it's wanted to tell, told a really sweet story at a reasonable rate, and then just left it. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I don't think by any means it's sort of like the perfect anime, but I really think it would be something that's interesting to talk about. Also, it's sort of a series, a sort of genre. It's very like a shoujo series, or not shoujo. What's an older shoujo? I can't think of what they are.
Jose.
Yeah, it's a Jose series, and it's also something that we like, a more slice of life, something that we haven't really ever really discussed or talked about in this series. It's mostly been either like sci-fi or fantasy, whilst this is very much rooted in a real world, just with a dead husband. And yeah, so that's my anime. I think it will be interesting to watch, certainly, and it will just be nice to get this anime a bit more airing and a bit more notoriety than I feel that it deserves.
All of our listeners.
All of our listeners.
Yeah, no, that sounds good too.
What were you thinking, John?
I don't really have a strong case for it. I just want to watch Mind Game again because I love that movie.
It's made by one of the more notable auteur directors, right?
It's written by Masaaki Yuasa and directed by him, and you know, he's a pretty famous animator. He is known for, you know, wildly different style, or what? He has a very distinct style to his projects, like Ping Pong the animation and the Tatami Galaxy and stuff like that, but this is just a movie, and it actually has a lot of different art styles throughout. Like, it switches styles fairly frequently. Story is about this guy who runs into some bizarre trouble with Yakuza, and he ends up dying, and then he goes into the afterlife, or in sort of a limbo, and he meets God, and God's like, go there to the afterlife. And instead he runs in the opposite direction, and, you know, he tries to come back to life. And it's very, you know, it's a very fantastical sort of thing. It's not a realistic thing at all. I mean, even afterlife stuff notwithstanding, like, I think at one point he's inside a whale and he like rows really fast to get out of the whale or something, or he's like running along the water. I don't remember exactly. It's been a long time since I saw it, but I remember really liking it. I like the message of it is sort of like, you know, go out and live life, stop hiding, which, you know, is a great lesson and one that I fail to follow frequently. But
well, I mean, the I really when you like went
come,
like
come,
you
come
went,
now
when you went outside to watch the Monogatari movie, that guy praised you, didn't he, for going outside? I mean, sure, you had to scoop in, but you know, you did it.
Yeah,
I can't tell whether he's crying or laughing.
little bit of both.
Oh.
Anyway, it's really good. I want to watch it again. I love it. I love Masaaki Yuasa, and I love this movie, and it's my favorite thing from him. So
cool. That's a tempting pitch.
Yeah.
Have you seen that Duncan had? Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just gonna say, have you seen his episode of Adventure Time too?
Yeah, it's pretty good. So good.
Yeah. If you haven't seen his episode of Adventure Time, I think it's called Life Cycle. It's season 4 or 5.
Anyway, I think.
Yeah. It was good. And I like how they delayed it so that it stuck in with the continuity with the actual canon, because it was originally going to be the first non-canon Adventure Time episode. And then they waited like a couple of weeks to, spoiler, for Finn to grow back his arm. And then they just put it in. But no, it's good. Yeah. Sorry, carry on.
No, I was just going to say, I know that we had that Duncan wanted to send something in, but he didn't make it in time. And I feel like we should decide here on the podcast so that people can know to watch it. So,
he wanted to talk about One Punch Man, which
because you and I had a very public fight about it.
Yeah, you're wrong.
That makes me disinclined to make it our thing. Although I think certainly putting it on the rack and letting it bake for a few more months and maybe bringing it around again when Duncan has a chance to be on and make his case would be a good idea.
Yeah.
I've watched it far too recently to want to like do a deep dive because I was just watching it, you know, like as a surface level thing. But I definitely want to get back to it someday with that in mind. I think that would be fun.
Yeah. Maybe once there's a bit more criticism on it too. And granted, like criticism comes at a drip drop pace when it's to deal with anime, but
yeah.
And also it'd be interesting to see when, because Mob Psycho 100% or 100 some cc or whatever.
Mob Psycho 100, yeah.
Yeah, that's coming out soon. So maybe it'll be interesting to see just how it compares to other of ones like anime and mangas that is going to continue.
I am so excited for that anime because Mob Psycho 100 is way better than One Punch Man.
Oh,
and
wow.
I love One Punch Man.
That's a strong encouragement.
Yeah.
It's going to be so good. And it looks like it's much more stylistic and like One Punch Man is really amazingly animated, but as far as its style goes, it's pretty like normal. Like it's average. It doesn't have a unique feel to the way it looks, you know?
Like
anime.
I don't know.
But Mob Psycho 100, the preview looks really great. It's got a nice... It really embraces the style of One, who is the author. But yeah, it's going to be good. Anyway, sorry. Go on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it's quite stylized. At least the manga is a lot more stylized to iChill 21's artist, who is just amazing, like really talented.
He's a very... good at motion and detail, and yeah, no, you're not wrong. I think the anime like did not embrace that as strongly as I would have preferred, but I don't think it was bad by any means, but
yeah, I mean, also a lot of the manga is a lot like just like the anime in some ways, it's very silent, like not it's like a lot of it is just sort of like you said, it's very good at capturing movement, which is amazing on paper, but then when you're putting it into an anime, which is about movement, you know, it doesn't quite translate. So, yeah. And also,
anyway,
But sorry. I am all for doing a One Punch Man deep dive, but I agree. I think it's pretty good, and I think it might have more of its problems than I originally thought, like when I read the manga. But it's certainly worth a note and a talk about, because I was so super super hot pumped when it was coming out. Yeah. And
if
I
for no other reason
than
because
really
it's such a big hit, like it's so popular, maybe it deserves some criticism.
Totally.
So yeah, we'll stick a pin in that, but for now, what do you guys want to watch for next time?
How are we going to decide on this?
Mind game.
I don't know. Do we want to like put it on a sheet of paper, or do we want, like, was anyone convinced by anyone else's pitch? They're all sound really good. That's the problem.
I'll be
We're
happy
smart
with
people.
Any of them. I don't, like, I love the idea. I love watching terrible things. Like, so I'm all for X too. Like,
yeah, I'm all for X. I just like I know that one of your criticisms that we had off the pod was that we're watching too much sci-fi stuff, which is why I'm strongly backing Natsuyuki Rendezvous. I mean, the easiest way to do it is for us all to vote. We should have discussed this before the podcast, because there's nothing more boring on a podcast than discussing the podcast form.
No,
it's podcast.
Fine. Now they know the process. That was the whole point.
Yeah. I mean, we do want to front up the process and like explain. I do agree. I think X would be a lot of fun, but that said, it's existed for 20 years. It can wait. It can wait a few more a couple of months for us to watch it.
Well, how long
I'm fine.
Is X and how long is Natsuyuki Rendezvous?
I said that it was 93 minutes multiple times. Okay.
Listen to you.
With the program.
Mind Game's 103 minutes, so it wins. Oh. It has a bigger number.
I mean, I think that Natsuyuki wins.
Oh, yeah.
If we're going for a total time run.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. How long is
me.
It?
Natsuyuki's 11 episodes.
Okay.
I should. I've just.
Our fr- is That will be our first full-length series, it is worth saying.
Yeah, it is also, the original manga run was July 2009 to January 2012, and then it aired on July 5th, 2012, so actually aired after the anime ended. So it's a full-on, it's a full, like, story within 11 episodes.
Okay.
And yeah, I don't know, I really enjoyed it, but I... Let's do it. Yeah?
We're gonna have a buffer because we still haven't gotten the Berserk episode out, so yeah, we'll be fine.
We will by the time this episode is out. You don't have to point it on some.
a picture into the process. Let's do that. Let's do it. Natsuyuki Rendezvous. You said it was available. Is it available anywhere on streaming services or anything?
It was available on Crunchyroll last time when I watched it.
It appears to still be available on Crunchyroll. So yeah, check it out on Crunchyroll or pirate it. I don't care. Fight the power.
You're such a rebel.
No, yeah. Let's
we
do
not
this.
Endorse pirating, but if that's what
no,
you
we don't.
Do,
we don't endorse pirating,
do.
But it happens sometimes, and it's very regrettable.
I mean,
but...
sometimes my fingers slip, and suddenly I'm downloading everything.
Yeah, I mean, everything. I'm gonna quote Gabe Newell on this and he said the best way to beat piracy is to make it easier to buy it than it is to pirate it. And I don't care that Funimation don't give a fuck about the UK and I can't watch anything apart from on Crunchyroll. So I'm gonna say go ahead and pirate it because it means that they're fucking up.
No, if we ever get it big, this episode's gonna destroy us. It'll be like the thing where the it'll be like the fighting game screens in that manga that's
in High School Girl.
I wasn't listening to a lot of that talk, but I heard that part and I was like, man, that sucks. Also when I look up Natsuyuki Rendezvous on Crunchyroll, it recommends to me Naruto Shippuden, One Piece, and Fairy Tail. So those are obviously all the same genre.
Well, I'm getting Naruto, Fairy Tail, Haikyuu, and Gate, which is, I mean, they're all quite...
Well, John loves Gate, so yeah. I don't know.
I like Gate. It's good. You know what? It's good. Fuck you. You know what?
Okay, let's wrap this up. It's been a good time, though. We learned that I'm doing a podcast with a bunch of pod people, literally.
Yeah, I mean...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should all watch Haikyuu as well. Fuck me, Haikyuu's good. But only the second.
We can't watch... Haikyuu is like a million episodes!
Hey, it's not a million.
It's on 44 right now.
How about we watch Saizai-san next? And yeah, that'll be great.
Can we watch One Piece?
Yes. We've done a One Piece pod.
Oh, I thought you said the Goonies.
Did we?
Because like,
it's not out yet.
Yeah.
I'm not the only one who's failing.
Okay, yeah, that's taking longer.
Okay, let's cut this shit.
Yep, we're done. Peace. Oh, wait. Yes. Oh, we got to like tell people where to do things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Send us some emails to
Keyframes.
Is it Keyframes Podcast? It's been too long. Keyframes. I'm so tired.
Send it keyframes to both keyframes@gmail.com and keyframespodcast@gmail.com. One of them's correct.
You'll get a bounce, and that bounce means we got it. tweet us or retweet us at keyframespod on Twitter. We don't have a Facebook
page. It's keyframespodcast@gmail.com.
Keyframespodcast@gmail.com. At keyframes on Twitter. And check us out on iTunes whenever we get some album art up. Hi.
We'll be soon.
Hi, our dear listeners. Keep on board.
We also have a website, www.keyframespodcast.com.
It's keyframespodcast.com.
Yeah.
And also, I reposted on my anime blog that's currently on hiatus, thecrabflowerclub.wordpress.com. So, yeah,
I'm going to put it on my Twitter account, which is at the one guy.
And that's all of our social media.
Yeah, that's it.
And anti-socials media. Yeah, so keep in touch. We're going to be kicking up into high gear. Double the number of episodes for the same amount of spotlight anime should mean for a more regular production schedule. So, yeah, stay tuned. Great things are coming. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye. Oh, he's grumpy. He's upset. We'll watch Mind Game next time.
More regular production schedule. More regular production schedule.
More regular production schedule. More regular production schedule.
Oh.